Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Bonnie Kay, and my co-host is Misty Hall. Misty, say good evening to the crowd.
Good evening, everyone, and good evening, Bonnie.
Good evening to you, and thank everybody for listening in. And we're very glad you can be with us tonight on our Straight Wives Radio show. We have a very important show coming up for you with some really interesting callers that we're expecting to call in. And just for those people who are interested in getting more support or more help, you can always find out more information from my website at www.gayhusbands.com. If anyone should need support, we have online chat twice a week. I have monthly newsletters that are available to anyone who writes in. Don't ever feel like you have to be alone, even though you may feel very isolated at the moment. So, Misty, how's the weather doing where you are?
Wow. I'm not for sure if I'm going to see the greenness of grass again. I think that's over.
You mean that green grass at home is really just a song that doesn't happen? That green grass at home doesn't really exist?
I don't think so. It's gone. I'm waiting to see. Hopefully it'll peek through sometime soon. You know, tomorrow's March, so maybe there can be a miracle. Let's hope.
Let's hope so. You know, I really think the weather has a lot to do to affect, you know, as far as people's moods are concerned. Don't you think so?
I'm sorry. I don't think I have a good connection. I did not hear what you said. I apologize.
That's okay. I said I think the weather has a lot to do with the way people's moods are.
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. There are many people that, especially in the northern parts of the hemisphere, where that there is less daylight than we have, they will do things like light therapy and things like that. Most definitely our weather can affect how we feel, for example.
And especially when you're stuck in for a long period of time.
It can be depressing.
And you're not used to it.
It's affective disorder.
I know. I think everybody who lives in the northern part of America must live a very depressed life. Unless they like to ski, which is always possible.
Especially this winter. Hasn't it been a crazy one?
It has been, but hopefully, like you said, hopefully it's going to be ending soon. March is here tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that's a good sign that we're going to be having spring just around the corner. So one of the issues that we were going to discuss tonight, because a lot of people have been asking us for this, and by the way, if you would like to call in and discuss any of your points of view on this subject, we want to give you our caller number, which is area code 646-716-4893. And please feel free to call in, because tonight we're going to be discussing a very important topic on self-esteem and sexual esteem. And I know these are two areas that Misty has been wonderful in helping women with her straight wife coaching. And I know that this is something that all of us who go through these marriages or relationships or even in families, because we're going to hear a little bit about that in a short time, really suffer from the consequences of this. So, Misty, maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Wow. And you know, going through this, some of this may sound like it's repetitive. However, it's so hard to untangle sometimes our self-esteem and our sexual self-esteem, how we feel about ourselves sexually, because it goes such hand in hand together. And that's okay, because usually if one area is high, the other area will grow as well in that self-esteem or your sexual self-esteem. And as you just said, we work with so many women, and repeatedly, this is what we find oftentimes. It's just so damaging to a straight wife's self-esteem, and especially her sexual esteem, because a lot of people in our culture, you know, it can be taboo to talk about our sex lives and things like that, and oftentimes some of the information we get may not be real, may be a myth, and it's hard to find good information about normal things when it comes to in terms of sex. So there's not a lot of great information out there. However, there is good information out there, so you sort of have to untangle it. But I'm going to step back a little bit and start out with self-esteem, because I think that is the first route to build your sexual esteem, is to make sure you pay attention to your self-esteem. self-esteem is just such a huge foundation in building yourself up, and especially from this type of trauma of discovering that your husband is gay. I mean, that's a terrible trauma. It's terrible. It's such a grief. I mean, because not only do you grieve what you're finding out, you grieve your future. You're grieving because you didn't know in the past. I mean, you're all over the place with the grief.
But before you go into that, I do want to make mention that I think it's really important for women to please take this in the way that it's being suggested, that many of us who go into these marriages have self-esteem issues. And that's the reality of the situation. We have self-esteem issues when we go into these marriages. And maybe that's why we feel even that much more deflated when we go into a losing situation where we were hoping that we could become winners, where there's no way to win. And gay men who are looking for a spouse, I always say there's a prototype that they're looking for. And, of course, one of the prototypes are women who don't have high self-esteem to start with. And I think it's important for women to realize that self-esteem is not who you look like, it's who you feel like inside. Because you can take the most beautiful women who are the richest women, the smartest women in the world, but it doesn't mean they feel that way about themselves. And men's senses, you know, if they feel you don't have a sense of high self-esteem, it's easy for them to, you know, find that kind of woman because they feel that they can get away with different things and the women are not going to object to it. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. It's rare that I have found or worked with a client where that's not true. Especially having a background in marriage and family therapy, as a coach, I've learned to look at past relationships with a client. And not only a past relationship with lover, I mean, but take it way back. You know, what was some of your best relationships with friends, maybe going through high school or through college? What type of relationship did you have with your parents? What type of relationship did you have with your siblings? What type of relationship do you currently have with these people? So I think that's such an important thing to point out.
Right, that self-esteem comes from all kinds of experiences that you have in your life that are way beyond your control.
Absolutely.
I know a young lady who I worked with who was just a beautiful young woman physically. In fact, most people would have loved to have looked like her.
Mm-hmm.
And yet her self-image was so poor, and it was really due to her father,
mm-hmm.
you know, because nothing she did growing up was good enough for him. You know, she made A's in school. He wanted to know why she wasn't making A pluses.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what she would do, it wasn't good enough. She didn't look good enough. Her friends weren't good enough. And when you constantly get these messages that you're not good enough, then you're willing to settle for something that isn't good enough for you. So I think a lot of people have self-esteem issues when they go into these marriages because they're really happy that somebody loves them and somebody's offering them, you know, words of kindness. And that often happens because these guys are really, you know, they do love these women and they're hoping that these women can change their lives, which we can't. But it puts a tremendous burden on us. And once again, if you don't have high self-esteem going in, it's only going to get worse. And if you have high self-esteem going into one of these marriages, it can really change however you feel about yourself because you feel that you're doing something wrong. So I just feel that before you even talk about how to work on self-esteem, that women should know that it is a very common problem that all of us face either before the marriages, and if we have high self-esteem going into the marriages, don't be surprised if you lose whatever you have.
Absolutely. That's so important to point out because, like I said, it has been rare that I've ever worked with anyone, and right now I'm trying to think if I have worked with someone that did not have some sort of self-esteem that they wanted to work on and or improve. It goes way back. And what happens, how you pointed out with relationships with this particular client you had, you know, it went back to the relationship with her father. And when you scan back over your life and look at your relationships, you know, what were the healthy ones? What were the unhealthy ones? And sometimes we continually repeat those unhealthy patterns because, like you just said, our self-esteem is low and we become too expect lower things. We lower our standards because we feel like we don't deserve more, which is
exactly
so untrue. And I read a sign. I love this sign, and I've got to bring this up. I was in Savannah, Georgia a while back because I love art, and I was walking down the street, and the cobblestone street. And by the way, I did feel like Scarlett O'Hare. I was just waiting for Rhett Butler, walking down the street in Savannah, looking, admiring the art. And there was this beautiful sign for sale, and it said, "Settle for more." Now, how wonderful is that? If we could teach these women to settle for more.
That's wonderful.
Settle for more. And I want that to be the motto of my life, you know, settle for more. And, you know, raise your standards. And raise standards for yourself and what you expect of others. So anyway, getting off a bit here, but I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, that's really an excellent offer that people should have. I want more. I expect more.
Yeah, settle for more. Don't settle for the scraps. Settle for more. And anyway, you know, when you reflect back over this, you brought up such a good point discussing this client, because what we do is when we hear things like that, that we're not good enough, we should have made an A plus instead of an A. You know, whatever it is we do, we should have done better. And what that does, as we grow up, we internalize those things. And as we internalize those things, the emotional baggage just keeps building on. We just keep carrying more baggage. I mean, how many suitcases can we carry, you know?
I know. There's so many different reasons, like I say, for low self-esteem. And it always amazes me. Like, I meet women sometimes who aren't what you call particularly attractive by normal standards,
mm-hmm.
who aren't particularly intelligent, and yet they have high self-esteem. And so that's why I've learned a long time ago, it has nothing to do with what you look like on the outside. It's how you feel on the inside and all the internal messages that you've been given all your life about how you should feel about yourself.
Absolutely. That is such a true statement. And unfortunately, you know, I don't think we had this information when, you know, you were growing up or when I was growing up. But finally, we're getting to learn this more, you know?
Now, I grew up in a fairy tale era, and
okay.
I think those fairy tales had a very huge effect on me.
Mm-hmm.
And you can laugh about it, but when I talk to you about, like, Snow White and Cinderella and, you know, having that always in my face, you know, that if you grow up and you marry a prince or if you look like Sleeping Beauty, you know, you'll have a prince. And always feeling kind of out of sorts because I was never one of the thin, pretty girls. You know, I always had
mm-hmm.
my own issues. So I always grew up with low self-esteem and not feeling as good as pretty as smart as. You know, and I looked in many negative ways for negative attention as a result of that and always feeling bad about myself. And it really, no matter how I tried to make myself feel better, it was just like in a self-destructive way. And that's why I think that women today, you know, grow up better than we used to grow up. You know, younger girls are given a message early on in life about all different things about themselves. But it's still hard when you have to compete in a world where, you know, there are certain standards of beauty and what looks good, who the popular girls are, you know, who are the ones who are going to be taken to the prom, who are the popular girls who are going to have dates. And if you're not part of that, you know, scene, then it's really easy to see how it can wear on your, you know, self-esteem. It certainly did on mine.
I think you just described almost every woman in America. So I think it hits on everyone, you know.
Not everyone, but a lot of us.
A lot. And the ones that do have, and I'd like to point out, the people and the women that you do sense, and because you can tell. You can almost walk in a room and tell who's got the high self-esteem. And oftentimes, you know, it's not like we're born with high self-esteem. They nurture it. You
exactly.
Know, go talk to that woman. If you've got a good friend that has such great high self-esteem, you know, hang out with that person. You know, what's she doing? What is she doing for herself? I can tell you, I bet she has some good tips.
Well, that's why I always like to, you know, find women who are successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people don't agree with this, but I look for women who have been successful in life, and I let them mentor me because I want to be successful in life. And whether it's a matter of successful or happy, you know, you can equate the two as the same. But if you find women who you do look at that way, then you need to find out what are their secrets to feeling like that.
Absolutely, and that fits in exactly. I mean, that fits so wonderful into what I was getting ready to talk about in terms of the self-esteem. You know, when you have low self-esteem, really take a good scan of your friends, family, your partner. You know, what kind of messages are they feeding you? Are they contributing to your low self-esteem? And who are the ones that are building up your self-esteem? So, I mean, I think that's so important that we don't put an emphasis on mentorship today. And mentorship, as an adult woman, is very important for me. And I always seek to learn. And just like you said, pick out those people that are friends of yours that have those strengths. Because what you want to do when you build up self-esteem, you want to look at your strengths. I mean, come on, we all have weaknesses. Put those weaknesses to the side. No one can build up their self-esteem by focusing on their weaknesses. Because you know what? You're going to just keep focusing more and more and more on it, and guess what's going to grow? The negativity, the feeling bad about yourself. And oftentimes, you'll notice more friends in your life that are helping you feel bad about yourself.
Yes, because I always say that misery loves company.
Absolutely. Isn't that such a true statement?
Oh, absolutely. And, Misty, we do have a caller on the phone, so
wonderful.
We're going to welcome our guest calling in. Hold on just one moment.
Okay.
And this will be a very unique guest for us. Hello.
Greetings. Good evening. How are you all?
Hi, Fred. This is Bonnie and Misty. How are you?
Hi, Bonnie. Nice to hear from you. Hi, Misty. Nice to meet you, too.
Nice to meet you.
This is Fred.
Glad you can call in. I appreciate it.
Thank you so very much. If you'll permit me, I just want to affirm what you've just been saying about the negativity just piling up and piling up. And all I can say is that is so true. And you go through cycles. Some are able to break out of it once and for all, but some of us are just stuck in a morass. Whereby you get a kind of consolation and you slide back into a comfort zone and you try and give the situation a little bit more time, and the abusers or whoever is involved just try to console you, and then they tell you they'll change, but then it starts all over again and you sink just a little bit deeper, and the negativity concretizes just a little bit more, and now I've reached a certain age, maturity, whereby on the one hand, the knowledge of years, the experience of years sustain me. But on the other hand, there is that despair that I will never break free from this negativity that started building up since, my God, before I was even, I'd have to say, I'm a creature of karma. This negativity started building up even before I was a gleam in the eyes of my parents.
And can you tell us a little bit about your personal situation and how it relates to us?
Certainly, if you'll pardon me if my voice starts quaking, because we're summoning some pretty dark memories from at this point, and I'll try and be brief and succinct. First of all, with respect to the show and what it's all about, I feel it very important to say that it's the focus, of course, is the straight wives with gay parents. But then, when you have a family that they've built together, then what happens to the rest of them, the kids? How does it affect them? And I'm certainly voicing that aspect, that perspective of what it's done to the rest of us. My mother married my father, both from a Latin country, where the values, for lack of a more diplomatic term, are medieval. The father has dominion over everybody. The wife has to fall in line and support anything and everything that the man says. But what happens when the father turns out to be gay? And that was certainly true in our household. My father, he just lived in the closet until the day he died, except for the fact that he dropped many hints. throughout the years that we were growing and maturing, and they finally came to a head by the time I was about 21. And that was the big scandal, and yet, because my mother never sought counseling, never thought that she needed counseling, lived entirely in denial, just let it pass her by and never did anything about it and pretended like it never happened, even though we had concrete evidence of the horror that had gone through. And that horror, if you'll pardon me, it's very hard for me to divulge such a thing, but we actually caught my father, how should I put it? I want to be as sensitive as possible, but we caught them in the parental bedroom with my second brother, Junior, Francisco Junior. They were, for lack of a more apropos expression, they were doing it, and he was taking pictures of it. And my brother Albert, exactly, my brother Albert and my mother, we witnessed them doing this, and we even I think Albert picked up the pictures that they left behind after they ran off in shame. And Albert happened to be gay as well. He went after father, and that proved to be such a terrible situation, because even though my father, who was in the closet and came to the point of incest, always mistreated Albert and really abused him because Albert was gay. And Albert, unlike my father, who was the, the butch type, Albert, on the contrary, is very effeminate. And that pretty much caused one horrible scene of violence and reproach throughout the years. And it does something to you that, instead of fighting against it, you just succumb and live with the reality, and you feel so worthless about it that you end up not doing anything about it. Nothing has been done about it. My father went to his grave with his crimes intact. Frank, who never considered himself to be gay, and he really never displayed it, he got involved with gangs. He's my second brother that committed the incest with my father. And he was always my father's favorite. And he was very, he was very mischievous. He was very reckless. And for some reason, my father lived through him. Then Frank got involved in gangs and the drugs and the violence and so forth. And, of course, he ended up in jail many times. And in jail, because he wasn't a very imposing person, he got raped a number of times. And within the gang community, getting a reputation for being a bottom or for allowing yourself to be handled that way, it could have proven his death. And from then on, he was constantly trying to assert himself, trying to prove that he wasn't gay, that he wasn't a bottom. And he committed one atrocity after another. And yet, he ended up succumbing to my father's advances, because he loved our father so much, so that he went so far as to commit incest with my father in order to keep him happy. Now, insofar as Albert, the gay twin, he grew up, what can I say, traumatized. Even though in school, because there in school he would receive affirmation, he just broke out of the closet and asserted himself, and then he just went too far and started really announcing himself and being perverse and depending on drugs to give him courage, and that affected me terribly, because as Bonnie observed, having seen our pictures, we're identical twins. And we'd be confused. So some homophobe would walk by, think I was him, and attack me, and all right, throw horrible things. And at one point, some local boys who were just disgusted at seeing Albert and his friends run up and down the streets naked, except for feathers in their hairs or stuck in their derrieres, singing operatic arias, all while they were totally freaked out on crystal methamphetamine and God help you, they drove by one day and threw Molotov cocktails at our house. So this behavior that they manifested, which stemmed from that, first of all, from the homosexual identification, and secondly from wanting to rebel against all those repressed traumas, led to some pretty terrible things. And Frank himself, he went so far to prove that he wasn't gay or who was a gangland member, accepted a dare one day back in the late 1980s. He was not yet 30 years old, that he actually attacked and raped a senior citizen. This lady must have been probably 70 years old.
This is such a horrible story. You know, one of the things I do want to really clarify here,
please,
in case, you know, listeners are very confused. That's okay. You know, a lot of times women's fears, and this is something that really happens a lot when they find out that their husbands are gay, they worry exactly about what happened in your family, that in some way that their husbands are going to go after their sons. But I do want to say that that is not the norm, you know, and nothing against your father, but that is just not the norm, that there's no more incestuous kinds of behaviors with gay men than there are with straight men. And, in fact, statistically, it's been proven that, you know, there are far more incestuous straight relationships than gay relationships.
Oh, I know.
But that's not to say that there aren't sick people everywhere. So, you know, but I don't want women getting paranoid over the fact that they have a gay husband, because that's not the normal behavior.
With respect to a gay husband and straight wives, my mother, she lived through all these horrors that I've just described and was just totally oblivious. She just cut it out of her mind, and to date, she lives in a kind of limbo, pretending it never happened.
Exactly, and a lot of women, they can't deal with it, Fred, and especially when you have cultures that it's not acceptable in. And we talked a little bit about that last time, that, you know, here in America, you know, people have to realize how lucky they are to be free enough to walk away, where in other cultures, even in this country, the Latino culture, Asian cultures, Muslims, they are really stuck in these marriages, and there's not much they can do about them except suppress their feelings and just kind of put their head in the sand, because they're not allowed to leave these marriages.
Exactly. So, she never learned what, in spite of our exhortations to have her do so, she never bothered to learn about what her rights were.
And by the way, I'm not excusing her, by the way, so I hope you don't misunderstand me. You know, knowing that a child is in danger, that has to come before everything. And I don't care how suppressed you are, how beaten down you are, you know, the whole point of being a mother is to protect your children.
So I ask myself the question, how is it that I or my other brothers and sisters survived this long with that?
But it doesn't mean you survived well emotionally.
Oh, yeah.
Or that it hasn't taken its impact on how you think, right?
There's that big difference between survival and living.
Exactly.
And we've just survived, that's all.
Well, I really do appreciate your calling in and sharing that with us, because self-esteem is our topic for tonight, and I'm sure these are issues that you really, you know, have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, right?
Exactly. And I've spent the better part of most of my life recovering the pieces of that shattered self-esteem. It's even though the perpetrators are all gone out of my life, Albert is far gone, Frank, the gang brother, and my father, they're dead, but still, the trauma is still there, and I'm still having to deal with it.
Terrible.
And the self-esteem is not to be had.
Well, keep listening to our show tonight, and you'll be hearing some really good tips.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in.
And thank you, Misty.
Thank you. My heart goes out to you. Just keep on. I'd like to mention one thing. The great thing is the human spirit is resilient when properly nurtured. So that's my hope and wish for you.
Thank you very much.
And keep listening to us. You'll hear some really good tips on how to get to that point.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care.
Have a great evening.
All right, bye-bye. What a sad story, Miss B.
What a call. Wow.
We have another guest now. Hello? Hello?
Hello, Bonnie. Hello?
Hello. This is Bonnie.
Hello, Bonnie?
Yes.
Hi. My name's Myrtle. I've been listening to your show. I'm really enjoying it.
Hi, Myrtle.
I'm actually calling in because I have some suspicions about my own husband. We've been married for quite some time, we just had our 20th anniversary, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, you know, over the years, there's been some things that I don't quite understand that he's done and ways that he's acted.
Mm-hmm.
So what would your suggestion be to trying to figure out?
Well, can you give us some examples?
Well, yes, he's just, the way that I've seen him looking at men out in public or even on the TV or the computer, and sometimes he makes me wear a strap on and then he sucks that off. It's just strange things. I don't understand where they come from.
Well, first of all, do you feel comfortable doing those things?
Well, I thought it was kind of weird, but he sort of talked me into it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
what would your suggestion be? I mean, when he wants me to stick something in his butt, what am I supposed to do?
Well, you're supposed to...
I mean, he's my husband.
I don't think that really means much. Do you, Misty?
You know, the stories can get so complicated, and I think where you have to think about this is yourself, okay? What are you sexually comfortable doing? Because, you know, people's sexual life, you know, as long as it's mutual, I think there can be a lot of things in there that are normal to that specific couple when things are mutual.
Well,
you're crossing a line.
Right, but when I'm wearing a strap on, that's not for me. I don't feel that. It's not really mutual in that
right.
sense.
Right, it's for him. And if it's not something that you're comfortable doing, why are you doing it? To make him happy?
Well, yes, you know, I don't want him going off with some dude.
Well, I mean, you know, the reality is that if he's gay, he's going to be with men. And there's really nothing you can do to stop it. Are there other...
Well, I mean, he has suggested that maybe I don't feel comfortable doing it, but maybe I go in for a sex change.
He has suggested that?
Well, yeah, it's kind of joking, like, hey, maybe you should just, you know, get a real penis and then...
Well,
I don't think he was actually joking.
I think you really need to listen to our show on self-esteem issues, because it seems like you really need some, you know, help in that area. No woman should have to put up with this kind of treatment. I mean, this is not normal. I'm being honest with you. Do you feel this is normal?
Well, thank you.
Do you feel this is normal behavior? I know you've
been
with
him
for a long time.
I was never... He's the only man I've ever been with, so... I didn't know if this is how, you know, couples act. I mean...
No,
he won't
not.
Let me use the computer to watch porno or anything.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps that all for himself. I'm not even allowed on the computer, so I don't really know what goes on.
Is he watching gay porno?
I don't know, because he won't let me near the computer.
Mm-hmm.
When I do hear the noises, though, coming out of the bedroom, and it sounds like just men.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you have a big road ahead of you. Don't you, Misty?
Yeah, I mean, it's really sad because, you know, you really have to realize and step back and say, what is this that feels right and doesn't feel right? Because like Bonnie said, sometimes things are just not normal. Whether, you know, they're gay, straight, whatever it is, when it crosses that line, it makes you cross the line of not feeling right or good for you, then you really got to step back and say,
right.
What's going on here? Why am I doing this? Or... Should I do this?
So should I stop the dildos now, right now, and just put an end to it?
Well, you have to do what feels good for you. I mean, is this what do you feel a comfort level in this marriage?
Well, no. You know what? Right now, I'm walking over, and I am going to get rid of these things because As you said, this should not be in the house. What are you doing? Oh, it's honey. What are you doing? No, I'm just getting rid of this. Honey, get... Honey, what are you...
Oh, well.
Wow.
Hello? Misty?
Hello? Yes.
Let's go on to our next caller.
Okay.
Hello? Hello? Wait one moment. We'll have our next caller calling in. Hello? Can you hear
Hello?
Us? Hi, this is Bonnie and Misty.
Bonnie?
Yes?
This is Tracy.
Hi, Tracy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. So good. Glad that you called in. We were just having some kind of psychotic breakdown woman on the phone.
I was listening to the psychotic breakdown woman.
Yep.
Do you ever wonder about the validity of those phone calls?
No, not at all. I realized it just wasn't valid, but that's why I had to cut her off.
Gotcha.
Or him off, or whoever it was off.
Whoever it was.
Yep, because I really couldn't quite tell. Could you, Misty?
Yeah, you know, you want to believe everyone when they call in, and it's unfortunate when someone uses this type of forum in a forum that we're trying to help other women in these situations, when they use it in a negative way.
I agree.
Exactly. I mean, it's a shame that you have to have people pranksturing.
Yeah, I think the problem is people don't take us very seriously because they don't really believe that it can happen.
I think people take us seriously, but I just think there's a lot of jerks out there who are just trying to, you know, have their 10 seconds of attention on our blog radio show. But thank you so much for calling in, Tracy. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what's on your mind, because you're an expert in this area.
Well, I just found it quite interesting, especially even on the chat with when you were talking about people staying in the marriages and the hopes that they can change things. And I found that very interesting. And you know, the husbands who feel that they're going to perform, even though it's not really what they want, just to keep the marriage going. And I can speak from experience, as you well know, that that doesn't work. It doesn't happen that way. It's, you know, you are what you are and you can't fight it.
I'm sorry. I'm back. I was off for one moment.
No problem.
Yes, Tracy, that's such a good point that you just brought up. You know, when we, isn't it interesting when we're in these types of marriages, and sometimes we just keep holding on for it to get better and better, and then tomorrow never seems to come. It's like you said, you just keep holding on, and you know what? You just are what you are. And it's so terrible when we try to make it work. And that's what happens. That fits into the self-esteem.
We want to ask you about yourself. I want to ask Tracy about that, since we're on like an honesty cruise tonight. Tracy, tell us about how was your self-esteem before you got married?
Before I got married, it was okay. It was never great.
Mm-hmm.
I went through a time period before I met my husband that I had lost weight and I was starting to feel real good about myself. And then we got married and everything was great. And then the self-esteem plummeted when things started to change in our marriage, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it became him forcing himself to stay awake on the couch to watch TV and me wondering what was wrong with me that he didn't want to just go to sleep in the bed next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as the years went on, we had two kids. There was always something not quite right, and I always seemed to think that it was me.
Mm-hmm.
There was something wrong with me. It never really occurred to me that there was something wrong in the way he was thinking.
And did you have conversations with him about this?
Every so often it would come up. And he would make a comment about, you know, feelings he had in high school but never acted on. And it wasn't until I really pushed the issue when our son was about 6 or 7 years old that he finally confessed that, you know, this was what the life he was living, and that I found out, you know, he had been very busy from 3 months into our marriage. So it was something he couldn't let go of, although he thought he could.
I think you mentioned to me he was busy before that 3 months, correct?
He was, well, before we got married, before we met, he had been living the gay life. That was what he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't, quote, supposed to happen.
And was there
I'm one hell of a woman.
You were very powerful. Yeah, but I'm saying that, was there any kind of indication to you at all? Were you, I mean, first of all, were you even thinking in the direction of gay? Was that something that crossed your mind? Bisexual, past experience?
Before we got married or once things started to change?
No, when you got married.
Once we got married, I started to wonder about it.
Before you got married?
Before we got married, no. I mean, before we got married, he had confessed that he had had, you know, like guy crushes, and I had talked to some friends of mine who said it was perfectly natural as an adolescent, as long as he never acted on them. And that's
the point I want to make to women, because so many women blame themselves on that particular issue. And I know for a fact that growing up in the 1960s and 70s, the thoughts back then was, well, this is normal behavior. You know, all guys experiment. You know, they try it. They don't like it. That's not what they are.
Right. But he had said he didn't even try it,
mm-hmm.
which was not the truth at the time, but I didn't know that.
Right. And
so there was no reason for me to think that there was anything wrong at that point.
And that's what I said, too. I mean, here's a man who loved me, who had
mm-hmm.
sex with me, who, you know, wanted to build a life with me. So,
and I think you have said in the past, too, that, you know, they go for the inexperienced women who, you know, are going to trust what they think is going on is right. And that was me. I was the inexperienced woman, and what did I know?
Well, that was you. I was experienced, so I have no excuse. Yeah, it's just like I wanted to believe because it didn't make any sense to me. Why would a gay person marry a straight person?
Absolutely.
I wasn't brought up with that kind of thinking. I was brought up with the thinking that gay people marry gay people or go with gay people.
I agree.
Why would they go with a woman? And I think that, you know, really threw me off, even though I suspected and people said to me that my ex-husband had some kind of past or had done things in the past, or even if he alluded to it, I felt, well, he tried it. That's not who he is. You know, it's not that abnormal.
So people have told you that before you married him?
Yes.
Because I got, after we split up, oh, I was surprised he brought you around in the first place from his family. And I was like, now you tell me?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I think the families really more than anyone else really want their sons to be what they call normal.
Absolutely.
They want them to be straight. And they're hoping that we will be the solution to the little problems they've been having along the way.
Yeah, we're going to fix the bump in the road.
Exactly. We're going to fix these guys up. You know, they gave them to us a little bit broken, but the fact that they're marrying us and they want to have a family and they want all the things that straight men have, that we're able to do the fixing up, and that's just not the case.
Absolutely.
But
do you watch that show Modern Family?
Huh?
Have you ever seen that show Modern Family?
No, I can't say I have. Have you?
It's a sitcom. Have you seen it, Misty?
No, I'm sorry, I haven't seen
it. It's a sitcom that's relatively new, and the one thing that I think is great on it is that there is a gay couple who have just adopted a little girl, and it makes it, like, perfectly normal. And I think people need to see more of that normality so that these kind of marriages don't continue to happen.
You know what, Tracy? In theory, that really sounds good, and I say the same thing. That's why I say I'm very much pro-gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that if gay people can marry each other, they won't have to look for, you know, straight women to marry.
Yeah, they won't marry us.
But the reality is, it's never going to change. And I think a lot of it is because of religious pressures, because of the way that society will always view homosexuality. It's not viewed like the modern family, even though maybe
right.
they show pictures and people may laugh at it. But when the reality strikes in, you know, people are still always very homophobic. And unfortunately, this homophobia, you know, internalizes for gay people, too. You know, I'm very understanding of why gay men are like this and why they feel they need to run and try to be straight. I'm just not understanding why they can't be honest when they decide they want to act on it. You know,
I think that's
the deception.
There's all these church groups, too, that swear they're going to, you know, cure them.
Exactly.
Which doesn't help our cause either.
Yeah. In fact, earlier tonight we were talking in our chat room about Gail Haggard
mm-hmm.
and her new book that she has out about her marriage with Ted Haggard.
Yes.
And when women hear these kinds of stories that men can change or they can be gay and not act on it, then they're really hoping against hope that, you know, they can have some kind of normal life with these guys. But I say even if they're not acting on it, even if I give them the benefit of the doubt, because some of them don't act on it for a while. You know,
true.
They go into hibernation. It doesn't mean it's going to last. I just don't know how much I could feel comfortable living with a man who is fantasizing about a man in order to be with me.
That you know what? That's, I think, the biggest self-esteem breaker there is when you find that out. because I did find that out. I had actually, because you know, in the beginning of this whole thing, I was a glutton for punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to ask the questions that I really didn't want the answers to, but it's like that train wreck that you have to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I did ask him that once, you know, when you're with me, are you thinking about me or are you thinking about men? And I did not like the answer I got.
I know. It's very self-defeating.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's just no way that you can ever compete with a man.
No, of course. Well, though, like as I say in my comedy, I don't have to ask, what does he have that I don't have?
Well, that's true. And can we talk a little bit about your comedy while you're
online?
Sure. Because Tracy has now, you know, become a professional comedian in New York, and we're very excited about that because one day she's going to be a big star on HBO.
And then you can meet Derek Jeter.
And then I can meet Derek Jeter, which is my dream. Tracy's going to hook that up for me, but first I have to get her the HBO special.
Right.
But, you know, Tracy tries to take, you know, a very serious subject and find some humor in it, because I think if we don't find some humor in it, we'll probably all just jump off the Brooklyn Bridge if we come to New York.
Yeah, I think you need to find the humor in these situations, in a lot of situations where if you don't find the humor, it becomes that much more tragic.
Mm-hmm. And you have really learned how to find the humor in this, because Tracy's now come up with gay husband comedy, which she does at her a lot of her performances. And how does it go over, Tracy?
It actually goes over pretty well. I you know, I've learned how to time it properly, how to introduce it into the set, and once I learned, you know, how to introduce it without it making the audience uncomfortable, it goes over extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of exciting.
I know. Can you tell us some of your best lines?
Well, you know, like one of the things I like to start off with is, you know, that this past December was my 20th wedding anniversary, and people clap for that for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just happened to casually mention that the best gift I ever got was for my 19th anniversary when my divorce became final.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they say you never really know a person until you marry them. Like, I didn't know my husband snored, and I didn't know that he made those really loud noises when he brushed his teeth. Oh, yeah, and I didn't know he was gay. And it totally takes people by surprise, because that's that, did I just hear that correctly moment? And it just takes off from there. You know, then it goes over pretty well.
I'm just curious, through all of your, you know, performances, has anybody ever come up to you afterwards and said that they were in the same situation?
Actually, yes. I was stopped by one woman who actually, her sister had faced the same situation. And she was telling me, you know, how difficult a time she was having dealing with it, and she really would like, you know, she took my information and she gave me her email so she could invite her to one of my shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had people come up and give me, you know, psychological evaluations, how I have to stop doing this kind of comedy if I ever want to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my answer to that is I find this to be the most healing thing I've ever done.
Right. Everybody has to heal in her own way. I mean, there's not one way of healing.
No.
But I think the fact that you can make light of it and the fact that you're able to laugh over parts of it, you know, that certainly does show healing. Don't you think
yeah.
so, Misty? I'll ask my
Absolutely.
Healing expert, Misty Hall.
Absolutely. Healing is so unique to each person, and you have to know what heals you. And how you know what heals you, you have to try many things sometimes. And when you find that area that heals, that's what you got to go with.
I agree. And for me, you know, laughing has always been very therapeutic for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And Bonnie actually is the one that pushed me to do this. If you recall, Bonnie, you tricked me into it.
Yes,
and
she's good at that, I hear.
Yeah, quite. But it was the best thing that anybody's ever done for me, because it really pushed me into something that I have found to be really healing in so many ways. And I'm not bitter anymore. I let go of that bitterness that I couldn't let go of for such a long time.
Right, and a lot of times if you can't get rid of the anger, it does turn to bitterness.
Yeah.
So that's why we encourage women to vent, get out your aggressions, get out your emotions, you know, let it all out, because if you don't get angry, you know, or if you just stick with the anger, then it does turn to bitterness.
And the anger is so destructive. I'm sorry.
I was hoping maybe you could discuss a little bit for us while we have you on the line, because
mm-hmm.
I know this is something that's close to your heart. You have two children.
Yes, I do.
And can you tell people a little bit how this has affected your family? Because we were listening before to Fred, and, you know, he grew up in the aftermath of having a horrible gay father who was also, you know, molester, which, you know, most gay
right.
fathers are not. But just, you know, living in that kind of environment, and, you know, how does it affect your children?
I have to say, we don't have the normal divorce, if there is such a thing, in that, you know, even in my divorce papers, I didn't put any kind of parameters for visitation or anything like that. And for my kids, they see their father as often as they want. You know, he either comes here or he, you know, he takes them places, and I haven't put any kind of boundaries on him as far as when he can see them.
Uh-huh.
So I think in that respect, my kids are very lucky because they don't feel it the way most kids do. We don't use them as a pawn. And we've maintained, if not, you know, in full reality, in my point of view, we've maintained a friendship enough that they're not suffering because of it. You know, I never tell them anything, you know, negative about their father. They hear things sometimes on their own.
Uh-huh.
You know, more about his, you know, financial responsibility and, you know, dishonesty in that respect. But I would never say to them, you know, this is your father's fault, you know, he's a bad person, because I don't want them to have that view of him. So as far as my kids are concerned, and, you know, maybe it's a little bit of a fairy tale for them, but they're not typical children of divorce in that they don't miss their father. They see him quite often.
Wow.
And that was my, you know, I swallow a lot because of it, because
yes.
I want them to have that.
And, you know, it sounds like you did something I always recommend for parents to do. You know, don't allow your children to carry the burden of pain.
Absolutely.
You know, that's wonderful that you're able to do it. And it's wonderful that, you know, you can have that open-ended thing there where they can see, they can have that freedom, and it's not restricted. How did you come about to make that decision?
I'm a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and I teach junior high, and I see it. I see what happens to the kids who are the products of these vicious divorces, you know, where one parent will come up for parent-teacher conferences and tell me not to say anything to the other parent if they should show up, and, you know, kids telling me, oh, yeah, I was at my dad's house this weekend and I left my homework there and my mother wouldn't let me go get it because it wasn't his turn to see me, and it breaks my heart. It absolutely breaks my heart when I see parents utilizing their children to get back at each other.
And that's in straight marriages. That's not
Yeah, that's straight marriages. And
marriages.
Even gay marriages, too. Like, there are people, there are women I know who are so, so angry
mm-hmm.
about their gay husbands that they will do anything to get back at them, including using their children.
Right.
And I refuse. I absolutely refuse to do that to them.
And that's what we try to explain to women, that as difficult as it may be for you, it's the children that you have to think about first. You know,
absolutely. And people think I'm crazy sometimes that I, you know, we go out for dinner together, all of us. And
no, I think it's great. We did the same thing as our children were growing up because I wanted them to have some sense of family unity.
Absolutely. And they know that we are a team.
You can't live together, but, you know, you're still a family.
Absolutely. And they know that they can't pit mommy against daddy because we are a team when it comes to raising them. We still have the same, I mean, not the same values in a lot of things, but we do have the same values in how we want our children to grow up.
Mm-hmm. But that takes a big level of maturity. You know, especially on the wife's part, I think. But I
Absolutely.
Think it's so important to be able to do that for the sake of the children because you want to give them the best chance of being secure.
Yeah, I don't want them to ever grow up thinking, oh, God, who's right, my mommy or my daddy? You know, there's something wrong with him, there's something wrong with her, why do they do this? I don't want that. I want them to know that we can still like each other, we can't live together, but we can still have some kind of affection for each other to the point that we're not going to kill each other over them.
But I think the other part that we need to bring up about that so people should understand it is that your husband also wants to be participating in his children's life.
Yes.
You know, that makes the whole major difference.
Yes, because there are so many who just write them off.
Exactly. So.
And
know,
I have to be honest with you, Bonnie, if he ever did meet somebody, I don't know that it would stay that way.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to say that it would, but, you know, we both know his track record, and it's hard to say.
I know. That's why we have to be happy that he's just having casual sex, I guess.
Yeah, it's good and bad, I guess. I don't know.
Good thing he's not having any emotional attachments or real relationships, right?
Yeah. Well, now, you never know.
Try to look on the bright side of things, right?
That's
you
an
know,
interesting way to look
bright
at
side
it.
Of
yeah.
This thing. Yeah. At least, you know, he's attached to the children. Not
exactly.
Being attached to some other direction. But I think if it is possible, I see that so many times you have to regroup the whole family aspect of this, and especially when another man is in the picture, and it's so hard for women sometimes to do this. You know, they see the man that they loved, who they built a family with, who they spent years with, and now, you know, with another man and loving him. I think
yeah, that's
very
hard.
Difficult. I mean, I think it's difficult when it's even with, you know, a straight couple, And this is so much more difficult because this goes so much against everything that we know to feel comfortable with.
It's not natural to us.
It's not.
And that makes
judging
so much
homosexuality harder. Because it's natural to us when it's not our husbands. I think that all of us will agree that we have gay friends.
Absolutely.
And that we've always had gay friends, and maybe that's why, you know, these guys are attracted to us, because they saw that we were open and liberal in our thinking. And it never
yeah.
bothered me when I saw other gay guys together. But when you see the man you love, married, cherished, nurtured, had a family with another man, that's what feels very unnatural.
Oh, absolutely. And when you see them, you know, getting a little, you know, I've seen him have crushes and stuff,
and it
that's
hurts.
The hard thing. That's
it
hard.
Hurts. Do you think
yeah.
it hurts more than if it were a woman?
I think it does, only because it's not something I can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it, and I never will, because it's not any kind of feelings I can relate to at all. I don't understand the feelings at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, I'm just, you know, men with women, women with men, and this doesn't seem right to me. Not that I don't think it's morally wrong as far as, you know, do what you want, but for me personally, it just doesn't fit together.
Tracy, when did you tell your children, or...
We were kind of forced to tell my son when he was 10,
mm-hmm.
and that was because one of the people in his family found out and started telling everybody she knew under the sun, and where we live is a very small place, and we had to sit him down and tell him the truth before somebody else did. And my daughter just kind of caught on. You know, she's 11, she's very feisty, she figured it out, and, you know, I answer their questions honestly.
I'm just curious, you think it affects their self-esteem?
I don't think so, because, you know, they see that I don't make a very big deal of it to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing that my son did ask of me when he was younger, like me calling into a show like this would have freaked him out completely, even though it's, you know, it's a smaller audience. It's not nobody in our circle would be listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was invited onto two talk shows, national talk shows, like when he was in junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to him, and I said to him, you know, I was invited onto these shows. What should I do? And he said, please don't. And I said, okay. You know, and kids can be cruel. This is what I teach, junior high. And I absolutely understood why he said it.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely, you know, I respected his feelings, and I didn't go on these talk shows. I think now, today, if I had said the same thing to him, I think he'd be like, go ahead, knock your socks off.
Mm-hmm.
But he's much more mature now. He's 16 years old. He's an incredibly exceptional child. He's a loving, giving child. It's, you know, he's just an amazing kid. But back then, it would have really upset him for his friends to find out anything at that point in time.
I don't know if he would ever discuss this with you, but, you know, I know that a lot of male teenagers have this problem in questioning their own sexuality.
We actually have discussed it.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty confident in his sexuality. He's pretty confident that he is straight. You know, he's never really questioned it. I've asked him outright, do you think you might be gay? Do you think you have even a slight feeling that it might happen? Absolutely not. So, and, you know, he's very just happy to be who he is, which I love about him, you know.
Now, here's the funny thing. You know, I was worried about my son, you know, after I had
mm-hmm.
one. But then it turned out it was my daughter. I mean, have you thought of that at all?
She, right now, she's in sixth grade. She's so boy crazy, it's ridiculous. So it would surprise me, but, you know, as she gets older, and, you know, right now everybody's boy crazy, or they talk about boys, that's what girls do at this age.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens when she gets a little bigger.
And is this something that you feel that you would be comfortable with if either one of your children one day came to you and said, this is who I am?
I think I'd be fine with it. Because I would rather, I want them to be honest to themselves. I don't want them to grow up thinking there's something wrong with them. I just want them to be happy, as any parent would want their kids to be. And I don't want to force my kids to do what their father did. You know, a big chunk of the reason he hid the way he did was because it just was not acceptable to his parents.
Mm-hmm. How are they accepting it now?
Well, unfortunately, his father passed away a couple of years ago. But his mother still will say to him, do the right thing and go home.
Uh-huh.
You know, in her more lucid moment, she's, you know, suffering from a little dementia right now.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, in her lucid moments, she has been known to tell him that he should do the right thing and go home to me and, you know, stop this.
Yeah, I think a lot of times parents, especially from his generation, really think you have a choice in this.
Absolutely.
And that you're making a bad choice, where we know that it has nothing to do with making choices in that way. people don't choose to be gay. They can choose to be honest about it.
That's exactly it. You know, the choice is in how you live your life, not in, you know, what your orientation is.
Tracy, do you think this has affected your ability to trust in future relationships?
Oh, I think everybody I meet is gay now.
Well,
you know,
in New York, so they probably are.
And I'm in theater.
And they definitely are.
There you go.
There are no straight men in theater, are there?
They're either gay, married, or both.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or gay and married.
Oh, yeah. That's what I said, gay, married, or both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But do you think that, you know, seriously, in the future, would you really be questioning a person as far as, you know, trusting them again? Did this marriage bring that, you know, forth for you?
I don't see myself getting married again at this point in my life. I just, I've been down that road, don't want to do it again. You know, hope maybe things will change in years to come, but right now I'm so busy trying to get my own life together. You know, to be happy who I am by myself and not have to be defined by somebody else.
And I think that's a point that Misty and I always try to make with people, that you have to first learn to love yourself again before you're even capable of learning to love someone else. And I think that's all part of self-esteem building, don't you, Misty?
Absolutely. I always tell people, you've got to have the first relationship you need. After this type of traumatic relationship, you know, when you discover that your husband is gay, the next relationship you need is yourself. You really need to develop that relationship with yourself.
And it takes a very long time to learn to love yourself again.
It does. It does. I remember those days well. And, you know, when you first get there, you don't think you ever will. I know I didn't. I didn't think I
could. It's a very long road.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work. I mean, you know, it just doesn't happen.
Thank you for saying that. It doesn't. You know, some of these women I work with, they think it's going to show up overnight. I say, listen, your self-esteem, your self-worth, your sexual esteem, it didn't get squashed overnight.
No.
You know, it was built up. And, you know, layer by layer, you can peel this off. Because, like, you know, when we were talking to Fred, you know, the human spirit is resilient. But you got to work at it. There's ingredients to make it work. And you have to be proactive in your healing. You really do.
And, yeah, and you have to just have to trust in time. You know, I think about myself 5 years ago compared to how I am now, and I still feel that I have a long road ahead of me, but I feel I've come so far.
Exactly. And do you feel you know yourself better now than you ever knew yourself?
Oh, God, yeah. You know, I still surprise myself quite a bit, but not more in a positive way than in... Usually it was like I always looked at the negative stuff, and I just couldn't allow myself to be happy. And now I find myself allowing myself to be okay.
And I think that's really a very important thing to understand, that after a marriage like this, you know, it's a recovery period. And I tell that to women, I wish that I could give you a pair of red slippers and you can click them and do it in a year from now.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't happen. I mean, you just have to travel that road day by day.
A friend of mine who went through this before me, one thing she kept telling me as she was helping me through it was she would keep a journal, and all she would ask for was time.
Mm-hmm.
That's all she kept wanting. I wish it was 5 years from now. I wish it was 6 years from now, because I know I'll feel better in 6 years or whatever. And that's true. You just, it's time.
Right. I always tell women when they say to me, how long is it going to take? I said, you'll feel better in 10 years from now. But the truth is that it'll happen a lot sooner than that, but you have to allow yourself to be happy. I mean, you have to find things to start making you happy, and that's where it comes back again to the whole issue of self-esteem, of starting to feel good about yourself, because you feel so deflated after these marriages.
Yeah.
You just feel like, you know, you've been a failure. You feel that, how could I have not known? What signs did I miss?
Or I love when people ask me that one, did you know? Oh, yeah, that's why we got married, because I wanted that for myself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's just like when we wrote our group book on how I made my husband gay.
Yeah.
It's about straight wives. And, you know, we can tell you this story. Misty, you weren't with us that day. But a group of us were going into New York. We were having our weekend get-together. And it was really interesting because we made a stop, you know, right in New York or by the bridge. And a man came out of a van, and he saw all of us. We had, like, 12 women in a van. And he came came over to us and said, well, where are you ladies going? Are you going to a show? You know, he just stopped to chat and be friendly. And we said, no, we didn't want to say too much that we were going to a, you know, book signing.
The book signing, right.
Yeah. So he said, well, how do you know each other? Do you know each other from church? And we didn't want to. We said, no. And finally, you know, someone blurted out, no, we all have gay husbands. And the guy was so taken aback, and tell him what he said, Tracy.
I don't remember.
Oh, he said, oh, were they gay when you married them?
Oh, yeah.
You know. Tracy,
well, what about the night that I made my debut in Philadelphia? The comedian after me said, all of you, really?
Yeah, really. The whole
group of us. He couldn't believe it.
Exactly. And, you know, like that guy, when he said to us, were they gay when you married them?
Yeah. That's a great one.
No, they weren't. They were straight. We made them gay. And that's That's how we came up with that title, How We Made Our Husbands Gay. Because people really have this misconception, and I think a lot of us buy into it, sad to say, that we in some way are responsible for this. You know, there are a lot of women, you know, who buy into it when their husbands tell them, if only you would have been more supportive. If only you would have been thinner. If only you would have been, you know, more attractive. If only you wouldn't be so demanding. If only. And, you know, they blame their wives for their homosexuality, and I think that so many of us are so emotionally beaten down that we start believing this.
I have to say the one thing I'm the most grateful for is that that was never an issue for me with my ex-husband. He never said to me, this is because of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he took responsibility for it.
As much as he's going to, yeah.
Exactly.
You know, but it was never an issue of, why did you do this to me?
No, but
I have to give
women,
him that.
You know, you've been in our groups before where we've met other women who really felt responsible in some way. And, you know, even if he would have said you're not responsible in some way, did you feel responsible?
I didn't feel responsible. I think I felt stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I felt more naive and stupid than anything else. And I felt, one of the things that was a common theme for me was I felt like I was robbed
mm-hmm.
of choices that I should have been able to make differently had I known. You know, like to me it was, I grew up with this whole, you know, you wait until you meet the person you're going to marry kind of thing. And that was a very big deal to me to give that part of myself to someone
mm-hmm.
only to find out that the whole thing was a false pretense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was my biggest issue, that I was robbed of that chance, that one chance. And that took a long time.
Even after you found out, I mean, was there a part of you that kept thinking he can change?
Oh, God, yeah. I could fix this. I'm going to make this work somehow.
Mm-hmm. And how long did that go on for?
That went on for a while. That went on, I mean, even after he moved out, there were times when he would come over and we would find ourselves in the bedroom. Because
mm-hmm.
I thought for sure, you know, okay. And we, even when he was moving out, we told the kids we just had issues, we needed to work out, he'll be back. It was complete denial on both our parts.
And I think that's so important for women to hear, that, you know, we want to bargain to make this work.
Yeah, it's like going through the stages of grief. It's the
mm-hmm.
same kind of thing.
And especially when somebody's a willing participant. And I tell women very often, you know, I write about the honeymoon period.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, when you catch your husband or you accuse him and he admits it and he wants so desperately to stay in that marriage and he says to you, honey, I'll do everything possible to make everything better and different. And they really do try, and it lasts usually about a month or two. But it's like they're trying for something that they can't have either. They can't fix what's broken.
No.
There's no way to fix these marriages. They're just broken marriages.
Because they were never really assembled properly to begin with.
Exactly. I mean, people just didn't really understand what these gay man can't be a good partner, you know, if he's in a relationship with a woman, no matter how hard he tries, it's an unnatural situation.
Yeah. And, you know, I really think that had things turned out differently, had he been honest with me from day one, I think we would have been friends all our lives.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the kind of guy that I would be friends with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of sad, too.
It is. But I think that under the circumstances, you're certainly putting it together the best that you can. We have another caller, Tracy, so stay on with us a second.
Sure.
Okay. Let's see who's joining us. Hello?
Hello, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm doing well. I had a very serious question in regards to just expanding my understanding.
Sure.
I have been a counselor for men for about 4.5 years, so I've kind of gotten a different perspective on it coming from the guys, not good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought is, as a Californian, I always wanted to see the laws really strengthen for ladies who were misled.
Because, well, I agree with you 1,000%.
Yeah, I know there's one in California when the person has been misled, not only do they get assets and everything, but they get over and above and beyond. And it kind of, we don't have as big of a problem in California. I'm in Atlanta now, but we don't have a big problem in California as opposed to, let's say, Atlanta, because the people back there don't play. And it's like a lot of the people who would be the first night, if I get in this, I know this is going to happen. So, you know, I just kind of would like to understand you ladies and your understanding of the laws and how it should be increased, because I really feel for you, and it's like I would just love to see some type of mechanism in place to where people know, hey, if I mislead this person, this is what's going to happen. You know,
I think there's two different issues here, and what is your name?
Mercy.
Mercy?
Hmm?
I think there's two different issues here, Mercy. First of all, and we want to be like really, you know, fair about this whole situation. There are men who really honestly believe that if they marry, they will not be gay anymore.
Mm.
And there are men who honestly marry who really haven't acted on their homosexuality. They've had twinges, they've had feelings, they've had attractions. And then sometimes they haven't even had that until later on when it starts to develop. So they don't go into the marriages, as I often say, looking to destroy a woman's life. I mean, that's not their purpose in getting married. They really, in most cases, love their wives, and they're hoping that that love will make those feelings go away. And we always say that a man really has no choice in these feelings. What he does have a choice about is being honest about it and at least saying something up front. Or if he doesn't even feel it up front, at least before he acts on it, to tell the wife. The problem is that the majority of these men will not tell their wives, and they don't tell their wives until they're ready to leave. And many times they're not ready to leave because they're very comfortable sitting in their marriage and going out and having indiscretions. But what I do feel, and maybe on the legal terms of what you're talking about, I can understand why any woman should have to end up paying for a divorce to a gay man. I feel that should be the law, that a man should incur the expenses of the divorce. Because they say that it takes two to make a marriage, but when you have a marriage with a gay spouse, that's not what that marriage is about. It's because of his homosexuality that the marriage is, you know, dissipating. So I really do believe there should be a law that, you know, if you're gay, then you're responsible to incur the expenses of the divorce. And also, I do feel there should be some kind of law that if you give your wife a sexually transmitted disease, that you should be responsible for that. You know, I feel that if you're out there having unsafe sex, and we have a lot of women who end up with HIV or AIDS, or, you know, hepatitis, or any kind of gonorrhea, syphilis, because, you know, they had no idea their husbands were having indiscriminate gay affairs out there, that they should be held responsible for that also. How do you feel about that?
Me, myself, I have experienced that as well in my 4.5 years, and it has been the honesty factor that men have an issue with. A lot of guys have had secret boyhood incidents that they refuse to talk with anybody about, and that came to light. But it was the honesty, like when they would be challenged to, hey, you got to be honest with the people around you, because they deserve that type of respect to make their choice on whether they want to X, Y, Z, Z, Y, X. And so I do agree with you, and I also agree with you on the health issue of it's too many ladies not knowing, it's too many little girls not knowing as well, as far as the teenage thing is concerned. And that needs to stop as well. My problem has always been with growing up next door to San Francisco, my problem has always been with people of that different lifestyle is the honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hide stuff from people. If that's what you want to do, then you're free to do what you want to do. Hey, I'm black. Some people, when I was growing up, choose to call me certain things. Hey, it's stuff you deal with. So you got to be honest about what and who you believe you are. And so, yeah, I do agree with that because I feel for people, especially ladies who have to go through that unnecessary, unfair thing. Just be real about what you're doing, and especially with jeopardizing someone's health. That's.
And I say that physical health is one thing, but also the emotional health and well-being, because I think what these guys really believe in their hearts is that their wives are happy because they're getting financially supported. They don't understand that this is not what a marriage is about, and that when a woman is so emotionally detached from, you know, her husband and she can't figure out why, and no matter what she does, she can't make him happy, you know, she starts internalizing, what am I doing wrong? And she tries so hard to be, you know, the kind of wife that he wants when, in fact, he doesn't even want a wife. But I'm just curious, with the men that you counsel, do you find that religious factors factor into this a lot?
Well, sadly, in my experience dealing with more urban men,
mm-hmm.
that was not the case. Majority of the urban men have had family incidents when they were children that have left what I call mental tattoos on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, you know, a lot of them have really struggled with since pre-teen. In non-urban communities, I've interacted with only a few, but I would say that that does have to do with it, with the whole religious issue, because in those cultures, it tends to be more about money and religion. There seems to not be too much of the in between, because guys of a certain type of upbringing, those are the only two dynamics they tend to speak about for all situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, I do see that. I would agree with you on that.
I think that we still live in a world that it's so much easier if you're not gay, and that people, if given a choice, would not choose to be gay. You know, it's just a very difficult way of life, and it's, you know, like I say, you're a minority, as you said, and you had to grow up with difficulty also.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's very hard when you're growing up as an African-American to pass that off as something that it's not. It is what it is. And you can be identified immediately. People know that you're black. But when you're gay, that's not something that necessarily is hanging over your shoulder. You don't have a G on your forehead. So if men can, you know, can hide from that, you know, they can disguise it. Growing up in a society that's telling you, and they're still making fun of gays and gay bashing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just looking. I mean, I can understand it, and I do have compassion for it. You know, I really do. It's just that you don't have to marry someone. You know, you don't have to be out to the world. You know, you can. Nobody says you have to make an announcement. And you can live a life without having to be openly gay, you know, to the world. You don't
let
have
me.
To, mm-hmm.
Let me interject and suggest this thought to you as well. And I had a situation as well, but let me suggest this to you. A lot of people that I've run into, and I compare my own experience with a pre-gay episode that didn't stick,
mm-hmm.
to someone that did in this day and age. When I was younger, I wasn't even 8, maybe 6. You know, I had 2 little friends, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, we did some stupid stuff. There was no penetration, but we did
mm-hmm.
some little humping stupid stuff. That didn't stick.
Right.
But what I've noticed now is that people, well, let's be honest, men, the tigers, the you know, guy from ESPN. You have a lot of guys who, it's not so much gay. A lot of guys are just so sexually addicted that they run to sex for everything. And it really depends on what sexual high dominates them. So in one guy's case, it may be the interaction with a gay person. In another guy's case, it may be something else. You know, but I'm starting to see a lot of guys take one little incident in life, and now I'm going to run to that every time I'm in pain. I'm going to run to that every time the business deal didn't go right. I'm going to run to that every time. And I talked to a younger kid about that as well. He didn't have his father in his life, and not that that's a major factor, but he internalized and said, okay, even though my first interaction was with a woman, it was this one interaction at 16 with a 36-year-old man that I found the most comfort and so on and so forth. And I used to say to him, hey, I'm not going to down talk what you do, but why are you running to sex for every emotional issue?
And I think that's so true, that people looking for that instant gratification, you know, some people get it from drinking, some people get it from drugs, some people get it from eating, and some people just get it from sex, you know, and especially a lot of times women are very confused, and we can talk more about this next week, maybe you can give us some insight again, you know, about sexual addictions, because a lot of times there are men who are having sex with men, women, animals. I mean, we've had women come to our group, and their husbands are literally, you know, allowing dogs to lick them, cats to lick them, you know, which to me is just really off the wall. But the reality is when people have these sexual addictions, they don't care who they're with or what they're with. And that's
very true.
That's very different to me than homosexuality. That's a whole different issue. Do you deal with men who are into other kinds of sexual issues like transvestism, transgenderism?
You know, we didn't have it as much. I was in a religious setting. We didn't have it as much. What we had, like I said, really was people who had experiences as children. So it's like they really, a really strange thing with a lot of men, a lot of men just need someone to talk to. Because as I said to co-workers, I said, you know, ladies will talk to their enemies at work to get stuff off of their chest.
Mm-hmm.
Guys tend to just internalize the same thing and just hold it for years. And, you know, it takes one person, male or female, to talk to them who's not judgmental, and they'll just pull out everything, they'll, you know, and that's all they really needed. You know what I'm saying? And then the recovery starts. You know, they go and start getting their recovery. But, you know, I've never had the transgender and the things of that nature. That hasn't been the scope.
Because we have women, you know, writing to us who have all kinds of sexual issues with their husbands. And I just think that, you know, it's not always a gay thing. There's all kinds of other kind of sexual deviances and fetishes.
Now I will suggest this, because I think this is uniformly true about most men, irregardless of culture and ethnicity. I would suggest that most women who find that their man has an issue, boyfriend has an issue, seek out and this is kind of biased, but this is how these guys think, seek out a male counselor. Because what's so strange is men have a tendency to not want help because they think that they'll be judged and or whatever the case may be. And sometimes male counselors give them that edge of, okay, I can open up because this guy may understand or may understand more so. While I've seen the reverse is true, I've had people who were way better counselors than me, but the client would really be standoffish from helping himself because this person just had a different gender.
Well,
so a lot of
I'll even go beyond that. I really suggest that men who feel they have, you know, sexual issues not only find a male counselor, but they look for a gay male counselor.
Oh, yeah.
I feel that they could really, you know, have a better, you know, relationship with a gay male counselor as far as coming out issues, as far as someone who understands them. It's kind of just like with people who are involved with drug addiction. The people who are most effective with them are people who are in recovery. because they understand what they're going through. They understand all the dynamics of, you know, drug abuse. And not to say that I don't understand it as a counselor, but I'm certainly not as effective as someone who's lived it. I can't anticipate all the feelings and the needs and the impulses with it, where somebody who's recovered does understand it. So
absolutely.
I don't suggest that. I think it's really important to find a counselor who can really take you beyond where you are and to where you think you might be going, and, you know, make you honest about it. But one of the things I'd like to mention to you is, you know, please feel free to email me at bonk@AOL, and I'll be more than happy to send you lots of information that maybe it'll help you a little bit, you know, with the clients you're dealing with. You know, I'd be more than happy to send you my newsletters and articles that might help you in your experiences.
Absolutely. Will do. I'm locking you guys in for the friend thing now.
Well, I'll be happy to make you our friend. And we hope that, I mean, we hope you'll call us back again, because you've really shared some wonderful insight, hasn't he, Misty and Tracy?
Absolutely.
Yes,
thank
definitely.
You for calling in.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mercy, and we'll look forward to having you as a guest again.
All right, thank you. Take care, ladies.
All right, you too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Misty, we're coming down to our last 4 minutes, and we really never got across all the wonderful points that you were going to bring up tonight, but that doesn't matter because we had a wonderful show anyway, right?
Absolutely. And, we hit on so many different topics that does help build on self-esteem. And I think one important thing is that we really don't mention sometimes. Sometimes our self-esteem just builds when we hear other stories. So you know what? It all works out.
Yeah, Tracy, it was really wonderful having you on here. I hope you'll join us again, because you bring a lot of really good insight and, you know, ways to change, ways to put your life back together again, especially for women who have been in long-term marriages. And also, we'll talk about this another time because we're running short on time, but there's a very big difference between marriages that were good marriages versus bad marriages.
Yes.
And Tracy was in a good marriage.
Yes,
and I think
was.
Those are the kind of marriages that are so much harder to recover from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're in a bad marriage, it's kind of like a finality thing, and you're kind of glad, ready that it's over.
I mean, it's like, who cares, thank God.
But, you know, in a good marriage, I think that's why you go through so much of that bargaining and denial, and how could this be happening? We had a wonderful marriage for so many years. That can't be all of a sudden stopping it. We had another guest recently who, you know, had the same experience over 30 years in a wonderful marriage. All of a sudden, one day, to find out her husband's gay, it takes, I think, so much longer to recover in good marriages. So I hope you'll come back, you know, soon and talk to us a little bit about that.
Definitely.
And we really want to thank you for being our very special caller tonight, and we want to wish you real great, great luck with your career.
Thank you, and thank you for the career.
Oh,
Misty, it was great hearing your voice.
Same
you
here.
You too, Tracy, and good luck. Can't wait to see you on TV.
Thanks. We'll work on that.
Work
won't
on
be
it.
Long.
Have a good night, ladies.
You
good
too.
Night.
We love you.
Love you. Bye.
Well, Misty, all I can say, it's been an interesting night, hasn't it?
It's been a very interesting night.
It just means that you have to be always ready to move in whatever direction moves you.
Absolutely.
Or whatever direction's coming your way.
Absolutely. We got to go with the flow. And we have, you know, and it's such a delicate topic. And I just hope that their listeners get what they need from the information we're trying to provide, because this is an arena that is not discussed or talked about very much.
And we're trying to open it up to the public and hope that you'll be listening next week as we come to you again with our of Straight Wives. So we'd like to say goodnight to all our listeners.
Good night, and love and blessings to all.
Good night, Misty.
Good night, Bon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.